Welcome back to the second hour of Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Garden Show, where we can have your gardening questions answered. And we have the amazing Lizzie Steele with us producing the show. She does all the magic, and we certainly need magic today, Lizzie.
Yes, we do. I think we do every day, to be honest with you. People have no clue what happens on this side of the glass. So
I will tell you, I am excited. We have so many great guests on the show. Next week, you're going to want to stay tuned because one of our favorites is going to be here, Dr. Gary Bachman. Mm-hmm. And he is author of Southern Gardens. And he is just an amazing, amazing fount of knowledge and experience. And we're going to be discussing monarchs, and we're going to be discussing plants for butterflies. And it'll be an interesting conversation. Yes. And so I'm looking forward to him being here. And so John Denver, we need to hear from him.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
And now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And the dirty word of the day is rabbit eye. And rabbit eye is a type of a blueberry plant, Vaccinium species, that is native to the southeastern United States. It's known for its high yield of fruit and its resistance to diseases and pests. Rabbit eye blueberries are tolerant of heat and drought, and they grow natively in southern Georgia, Alabama, and North Florida. The name rabbit eye comes from the pink or red color of the berries in their early stages of growth, which are said to resemble a rabbit's eye. Rabbit eye blueberries have their own pollinators, the blueberry bee, the carpenter bee. Solitary bees are very effective for pollinating blueberries. Honeybees, because of their shape, are not as efficient. They actually shake off the pollen off their legs as they're coming out, because it's so awkward for them to get into the blueberry flower. Rabbit eye and southern highbush blueberries grow well here in Florida. However, only the low chill cultivars of each are adapted to Florida. Generally, blueberries grow well in areas of Florida that have winters as cold or colder than winters in Ocala. The southern highbush cultivars that are commonly grown in Florida are well adapted to areas south of Ocala and north of Sebring, although they will grow reasonably well in Alachua County. The southern limits of southern highbush adaptation in Florida has not been fully determined yet, so you may want to give it a try. We have a guest coming up, Dr. Jeffrey Williamson, who is going to tell us how to grow blueberries. So we thank John Denver for the dirty word of the day, rabbit eye. And so that is wonderful. And so we are going to have a wonderful conversation. If you've ever tried to grow blueberries and you didn't have luck with it, we're going to give you the really good advice about it. Also, too, if you will go to our Facebook page, I will be posting all of our interviews and shows as podcasts on our Facebook page. And then anywhere where you listen to podcasts, you can hear the show. So that will be good. Susan from Vieira, she asked us a question in the last hour. If you'd like to go ahead and listen to that hour, you can hear it on podcast later. But she wanted to know what to spray on the pygmy trees and holly trees. And I just wanted to just stick this in there. So, Susan, I don't know if you mean pygmy date palms. And if you have mold on it, it may not be mold, but the cycad scale. And if it's cycad scale, then the fungicide is not going to work on it, and it's not a mold. It could be cycad scale, and you're going to need to use an insecticide on it. All right. And so you will, a neem oil such as, you know, Fertilome, rose flower, and vegetable spray will work. The Garden Safe neem oil will work, and Bonide neem oil concentrate will work on the cycad scale. So check that out. Make sure we don't have two different things going on there. Thank you so much for that. And so later on in the show, you can give us a call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. We have questions coming up on amaryllis and poinsettias, and then also mulch. So you want to stay tuned for those. Dr. Jeffrey Williamson is joining us, and he is a blueberry researcher at the University of Florida. Go Gators. And I am going to be interested in talking to him because my blueberries did very well last year.
And except
for that one night. I don't know what's happened. I'm going to ask him.
They disappeared.
They just disappeared. It was like they just, I don't know.
Well, I have a question for him. Does he make blueberry pancakes at least once a week because of where he works?
We'll ask him about that. The blueberry pancakes is one of my favorite things. Tony makes the best blueberry pancakes. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. Dr. Jeff Williamson is a professor and extension specialist in the Horticultural Science Department at the University of Florida. His primary research is in blueberry rootstock development, commercial blueberry growing, and new machine harvesting techniques for fresh blueberry production. He serves on the board of directors with the Florida Blueberry Growers Association, and he's a liaison editor for the Blueberry News. He teaches at UF, participates in graduate student education, master gardener training, and 4-H education in fruit sciences. Winter's the best time for planting blueberries, so I asked Dr. Williamson to come on and give us his best advice on growing delicious blueberries. Good morning, Dr. Williamson. Welcome to Better Lawns and Gardens.
Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
I am great. So, great. Lizzie and I, we love blueberry pancakes. Do you have blueberry pancakes often?
I do. I have a year-round supply of blueberries, as you might imagine. As long as we don't have a hurricane and I don't lose power for an extended period of time, I'm set for the year. They freeze really well for cooking and things of that nature.
That is wonderful, and I'm so jealous. And so what blueberry varieties, because sometimes they need pollinators, so what blueberry varieties are recommended for Florida?
Well, that's a really good question, and it is important for your audience to know that blueberries are not considered self-fruitful. They do need, you need at least two varieties and preferably more for the mixing of pollen during bloom to get good production. So the varieties that you might grow kind of depend on where you are in the state. If you're, and I don't know if what the reach of your audience is, but if you're in South Central Florida, let's say, where the winters are very mild, you're kind of limited to the what we call the southern highbush varieties. And some standouts in that area would be Emerald, Jewel, and Farthing. Now, this is all for the home gardener. We're not talking about commercial.
Right, exactly.
Product. And so Emerald, Jewel, and Farthing would be good ones. You might still find Sharp Blue and Gulf Coast, which are very old varieties, but they're still out there. They're also real low chill. So for that part of the state, those would be possibilities. As you move north, into central or north central Florida, let's say, like Marion County, Alachua County, in those areas, you can still grow Emerald, Jewel, and Farthing, and you can add a couple more like Windsor and Wheat Crisp. And then as you move north from Gainesville, or let's say including the Alachua County and up towards Jacksonville and then across to the Panhandle, it opens up the opportunity for rabbit eye production.
There you go.
And there's several rabbit eyes that can be grown, but they have more chilling needed, so you can't really grow rabbit eyes down south of Orlando, let's say, or even around Orlando.
That's good to know. So how tall do they need to be to give you a good harvest?
Well, let's talk about the southern high bush, because they are different. Rabbit eyes and southern high bush are very different. But if we're talking about southern high bush, your ultimate goal is to get them up to be about 4 to 5 feet tall. That would be a mature-sized plant, and that fits in most garden scenarios pretty well. The rabbit eyes are much, much bigger plants, so you really have to have room for them. They can get up 12, 15 feet tall. So
when should you prune them, and how do you prune them to get them that tall? Because mine never get above, 3 feet.
Well, they can be pruned at various times of the year. You can do some pruning this time of year in what we call the dormant period in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. And they don't need a lot of pruning as young plants. So as young plants, it's more like to just let them grow and develop. And if they get, say, 4 to 5 years old, you can start doing some selective pruning to remove the less productive wood and open up the canopy. We have publications on that online at the University of Florida to give you more detail. Sometimes you can do what we call a summer topping. After harvest, you cut the plant back about a foot or so and let it regrow during the summer.
I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen that in the Apopka area, the blueberry farms there, and I see them cutting them back in the summertime.
Yes, that's a standard commercial practice, and the idea there is to stimulate summer growth.
Okay.
And that summer growth produces the wood where the berries are born the next year.
Okay, so how important is the soil for blueberries?
It's very, very important. If you look at the blueberry plant in total, the root system is kind of like the weak part of this. It's the weak link.
Right.
So blueberries do require very specific soil conditions, much like azaleas. They like an acidic soil, say in the pH range of about 4 to 5.5. They like high organic matter. They need a weed-free environment. They don't compete well with a lot of weeds, and they need access to water, although they don't like too much water. So they're kind of particular and kind of picky in terms of their soil. They have a very shallow root system, so when you fertilize them, you always fertilize in light doses fairly frequently throughout the year, but in light doses, so they never get too much fertilizer at one time because of their shallow roots.
Okay, so how many blueberries should a family have in their yard that to give them blueberries, a good harvest?
I would think if things, that all depends on how the season goes, but if things go well, and you're growing the southern high bush type, which are the smaller ones, even though they're called high bush, they're smaller than rabbit eyes. Mm-hmm. So if you're growing those, if you had four plants of three different varieties, if you had room, a total of 12 plants, that would give you plenty of blueberries.
Okay.
You could get by with less or more, depending on the situation. With rabbit eyes, you probably wouldn't need more than about 5 or 6 plants. And the reason you need that many is more to get your good pollination going than because there are not enough fruit
right
on a given plant.
All right. And so, do we have a large amount of blueberry bees in the state, or can any bee be a pollinator?
Well, a lot of different bees can be pollinators. There is something called the southeastern blueberry bee, but it's a solitary bee, and it's not usually found in very high numbers.
Okay.
So honeybees probably do most of the pollination, although bumblebees are probably the best pollinators. So if you can do anything to encourage your bumblebee population, that would be helpful, as well as honeybees.
Okay, that's good to know. So last year, my blueberries, which are doing nicely, they're dormant right now, so I've got a little few red leaves still left on them. But I had beautiful blueberries. I had over 100 on there, and they just were so nice and plump. And I said, oh, I've got to come out here tomorrow and pick them. And overnight, they were all gone. And there was no blueberries on the ground. There was no bird droppings. There was no crushed leaves, no broken branches from like critters. What happened to my blueberries?
Well, maybe you need to have a talk with your neighbors.
Right? I didn't even think about that.
But, well, actually, you know, birds, my first guess would be birds. But even though you didn't see any evidence of birds, birds are very, very much a pest for eating ripe berries. And they know right when they're ripe. And if you see wax wings around, they're kind of in flocks. And if you know what you're looking for, you can recognize wax wings. They are one of the worst at eating ripe berries, but other birds will do it too.
Okay.
And really, you kind of have to put netting up, I found. You know, the only way that really works is to exclude them from the blueberry plant. And we do that sometimes with netting.
Okay. And so what size netting would I need?
Well, it helps if the net is small enough that the berries won't poke through it.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, maybe like 1/4 inch or something. Without looking, I'm not sure the exact dimensions, but it doesn't need to be extremely fine net, but it just needs to be small enough that the plant material and the fruits won't poke through. And then when you remove the net to pick, you accidentally lose berries by pulling them off if they're sticking through the net. So that's the limiting factor there.
Okay. Well, we only have a few seconds left. If you could give me your best advice on blueberries, what's the most important thing, and then a website that people can go to and find out more information about growing blueberries from the University of Florida.
Yeah, so the website that I would recommend would be what we call the EDIS website. It's EDIS.UFL.EDU. And then if you go in there, you'll have to navigate your way through the site to find the blueberry section. But we have a lot of online publications about blueberry there. You know, and there's other good sources from other land-grant universities around the country on blueberries. But we have a lot of information at the University of Florida. And I would say my best advice, I'm going to try to roll as many things into one sentence as I can, but don't plant the plants too deep. I see a lot of people doing that where they plant them a little too deep. And don't over-fertilize. Use light doses of fertilizer, you know, at maybe monthly or intervals throughout the growing season rather than piling it all on at once.
Thank you so much, Dr. Williamson. We'll be back with more of Better Lawns and Gardens from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. want to give a big thank you to Dr. Jeff Williamson with the University of Florida at IFAS and Extension for coming on and talking about blueberries. If you missed it, he gave some really great advice, and you can catch it on our podcast. Upload it to Better Lawns and Gardens, and you can subscribe to it. Anywhere where you listen to a podcast, you can hear the show. And when you subscribe to it, then it just automatically lets you know when it's uploaded.
There you go.
And that's good. And so I do want to get to text messages, 23680, if you have a text message. Or you can call me, 1-888-455-2967. And so JAC in Cocoa Beach says that he has ant colonies in his 7-gallon pots, and the bad thing is they're carrying out the soil through the drain holes at the bottom. And he says, how do I get rid of colonies, or should I? Well, yes, you should. Go ahead and get rid of them. And the best way to do that, because it's 7-gallon pots, it's going to be heavy. You don't want to really, carry it over and dunk it in a pot and have it soak the pot, which would then just drown the ants, and then they would leave. But I would use a bait, like Amdro granules that you can place out. And what that does is that the ants then carry, the worker ants carry the bait down to the queen, who is somewhere in that pot, and she will die. And once the queen dies, then the whole colony dies. So go ahead and use a bait, and that will help out. Thank you for the text message. Let's go to Kelly in Tallahassee. She has a question about mulch. What is the benefit of pine straw? Does it work as well as pine mulch? And she said, what blocks weeds the best? And thank you. Well, thank you for texting, Kelly. I certainly appreciate it. And we certainly appreciate it, you listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. So what is the benefit of pine straw? Well, it is a mulch source, and if you have lots of pine trees around your property, then it's a really good cheap source for mulch. So it needs to be at least 3 to 4 inches thick. The benefit of it is that it will prevent weeds when it's thick, but the downside is it breaks down very quickly. So within 6 months to a year, you need to replace it. And so so pine straw is a source of mulch, and, just depends on your, priorities. Now, does it as well as pine mulch? It can, but it doesn't last as long as pine mulch. Pine bark mulch will last 2 to 3 years, and you won't need to replace as much on it. So it's just a choice. And what blocks weeds the best? I would say the pine mulch does. So thank you, Kelly, for asking. Lisa in Orlando, how can we help you?
Hi, my lawn is covered with clover, just covered. And I have beautiful plants, and my lawn is just destroying my beautiful flowers. So what am I going to do?
So the clover in your yard? Okay, what kind of turf do you have?
I have,
St. Augustine or Bahia grass?
Yes.
You have St. Augustine. Okay, and are you sure it's clover?
Yes, because I've been digging them up from my plants.
Okay, and do they have a root ball on them?
Huh?
Do they have a root on them, the clover?
Yes, like the little garlic.
Uh-huh. Okay, so it could be some oxalis too as well, oxalis and clover. You can use an herbicide for weeds for St. Augustine lawn, and that would be atrazine. And
How do you spell it?
A-T-R-A-Z-I-N-E. Okay, atrazine. And I remember it with atrazine St. Augustine. Okay, and so it's rhymes. And so you can use that, follow the label. And I would put it on probably with the warmer winter that we're having. I would put it on in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. What is it? Does it come in powder, liquid, or what?
It comes in bottles. It comes in bottles, and spray, and also liquid, yes.
And will it reach the little root underground? They go deep, you know?
Yeah, it will. All right, follow the label. Thank you so much, Lisa. Let's go to Diane in Kissimmee. Good morning, Diane. How can I help you?
Hi. I live in the communities with the zero lot lines, which is pretty bad, but I happen to have a little bit larger lot. And although everyone's cutting down their trees, I want to plant trees that will that the birds would want to nest in, because the poor critters have nowhere to go anymore because everyone's getting rid of trees.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. And so so you have a zero lot line, only it's bigger. Where are you going to plant it, in the backyard or the front yard?
It'll be in the backyard.
Okay. So any of the trees, like oak trees, holly trees, elm trees, any tree that you plant is going to be good for birds. Okay, but I would just say, depending on how much space you have, oak trees are going to need the most space. Yeah.
So, not much.
Okay,
not
then
much.
I would do holly trees.
Holly trees.
Okay. Holly trees, yes. And there are several varieties that you can select from, but that will have the berries that attract them. And then any trees that you plant, or any, the birds will also use large shrubs. So if you have any kind of viburnums or ligustrums in your yard, they will nest in that. So
ligustrum's my favorite.
Okay, so you know, if you have a couple of ligustrum trees, the only thing is that birds like to nest in trees that are kind of kept private. So if you have landscapers that trim them to a right size, you know, they trim them like every week or every month, then just let them know they need to be very careful around that tree, so because of the, you want to attract birds.
Okay. Oh, that's wonderful. The cardinal wakes me up every morning, and I just love him.
Oh, so wonderful. Oh, that's great. Yeah, holly tree will be just wonderful for them, and they will love that tree, and it'll attract more birds with the holly berries.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Teresa. I just love your show.
Thank you so much.
Wait for it every morning.
Oh, how nice. That's wonderful. We love that, too. We can't wait for it either. Thank you so much. That's a great question. All right, hon. Thank you. And let's see. Let me go right over here to the text. Let me go to Rod in Port Richey. Rod, yeah. So are we going to go to a break right now? Okay, so Rod in Port Richey has a question on why his amaryllis are not blooming and what's going on with his poinsettia. So he sent me great photographs, and I really appreciate it. And I got the answer, Rod. We're going to take care of you and come back from the break. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. We still have time for your phone calls, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text at 23680, and we'd love to hear from you. So Rod in Port Richey, he wrote a nice email and sent some lovely photographs. Last spring, a nice neighbor lady gave me about 3 dozen amaryllis bulbs that she dug up in her gardens. I love when gardeners share. I planted about 2 dozen of them in my front yard in front of Snow in the Mountain hedge, the rest in flower pots. The attached picture is what they look like today. They never flowered. The lady that gave them to me replanted some of her bulbs that she dug up, and they never flowered either. What should I try to do next? Rod, they're great questions. And again, thank you for the photographs. That helps me so much. The amaryllis look fine. And it just may be that transplanting them disrupted their blooming cycle. So they may take 1, possibly 2 years or 2 seasons to get back into the seasonal sequence of blooming. I think they will bloom for you this year, but you can encourage them by giving them blooming fertilizer with a higher middle number with phosphorus, and that's going to be better. If you give them fertilizer with high nitrogen, they just may rather grow leaves than bloom, okay? So I think they're getting enough light, so just be patient. Let me know this year if they bloom for you, okay? And then your poinsettias, they look normal. They look like they're going through winter, and with the temperatures, we've had a couple of cold blasts. But the weather's too warm or too cold, it could stop the bracts from, you know, changing color. And what I would suggest you do is go ahead and cut them back in March so that you take off those bracts and get it nice and dense. And then you want to prune them monthly, maybe just snip them just a little bit through August if they're getting leggy. You want to make sure, though, that they're getting complete darkness from September through December to encourage those bracts to change color. It looks like they wanted to, but we didn't really get that darkness. So if you have a nightlight outside or a pole from the street, you may want to cover up your poinsettia with a box or something. Okay. So go ahead. We got a caller. Good. Ralph, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. I wanted to ask you a question about a dancy tangerine tree that I planted last March.
Okay.
I got it from Quality Green over in DeLand.
That
old gentleman Dana over there preaches a good sermon about these trees, and planted it the way he suggested, and right now it's some of the leaves are showing a yellow tinge. Some of them look like some critters might have been gnawing on them, but I've never seen anything on them. No bugs or anything.
Okay.
I thought I'd ask you what might be up with that.
Okay. Well, you know, tangerine trees, that they do get some pests on them, so you want to just keep an eye on them. Sometimes it's leaf miner, which doesn't do any damage. Sometimes it could be lubber grasshoppers that do some damage. So if you haven't seen anything, it just may be a moth or larva that's on the leaf, but it's also a host plant for butterflies. Okay, citrus has a lot of wonderful larva insects that turn into butterflies. So it may just be something that is just taking advantage of the delicious leaves, but it's going to turn into a butterfly. So it may not be a big issue for you. Now, has it started to flower for you, or did it flower last year?
It did a little bit. Dana told me not to let it try to grow any fruit this past year or this year, as a matter of fact, he said.
Okay.
I've been trying to pinch them off. But it did sneak two little tangerines in on me.
Okay.
Very small, maybe like a half inch. I pulled those off when I saw them. But anyway, that's where I'm at with it.
Okay, well, I think everything's going fine. It doesn't sound like it's doing bad. You can, put down a pesticide if you see insects chewing on it. But I think it's doing just fine, and it's just normal, just issues. And you could be just helping the butterflies out a little bit.
Great, then.
Okay.
Fine with that.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. I'm glad you went over to Quality Green Specialist. Dana is a fountain of knowledge. That's wonderful. Let's go to Brad in Palm Bay. Good morning, Brad. How can I help you?
Hi, ma'am. I love your show, so thank you for doing that.
Oh, you're welcome.
My question is this. I have a plumeria tree in a ceramic pot that it has outgrown and now has lifted the pot up about 6 inches from the ground. What do I do to replant it?
Okay, so what shape is the ceramic pot?
Typical pot, small, about 8 inches in diameter at the bottom and about 12 at the top.
And 12 at the top, so it's got a wider, okay. So
there's holes in the bottom where the roots have grown into the ground.
Okay, is it an expensive pot or a pot that's, really treasure?
We're having to break it.
Okay, so you can break it. Okay, so just break it and put it in the ground. It'll do just fine.
Okay.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much, ma'am. We were worried about it. I didn't want to kill it. Love the smell of it.
Oh, no. It'll be just fine. I would just make sure that the roots are not girdled in the pot. You may want to kind of just very gently open up any roots that have compacted itself inside that pot while it's been growing out the bottom. So just open up the roots.
I'm glad to do that, and thank you for your show. I love it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Roy. 1-888-455-2967. We can get in just a little bit, or you can text 23680. So we have somebody just that we helped. Susan said, thanks, Teresa. I did see ants on the tree. Ants are a really good symptom of something going on with the tree. They're not a source of a problem, but they are a symptom. They're coming after something sweet that they find on the tree, and that usually is insect signs of insect trouble. So we have an ant problem on the property. Again, Amdro bait is the best. You want to kill the queen. And once you kill the queen, then you will not have any more issues. So you want to make sure that you're using a solution that doesn't create more problems. If you use hot water, or if you go over to the ant mound and stomp on it, then that's going to disturb the ants, and they're going to move that queen. And sometimes, once in a while, there are multiple queens in a colony, and they will move that queen, and you'll have three holes, you know, ant holes, instead of, you know, just one. So using the bait very carefully, follow the label, is the best way to get rid of it. All right. And then she says, we have a sanctuary in the backyard, lots of wildlife, scratches on the tree from the wildcat, and one scratch is oozing out liquid. Susan, okay, so you don't need to do anything to the scratches. The tree will survive. There's no need to paint trees that have scars on them. The oozing will kind of seal itself up by itself, so there's no problem with it. If it's a really young tree, it may cause it to stress out a little bit, but we do not paint wounds anymore. We do not paint the bottom of trees anymore. You want the tree to breathe, and it will do that best naturally on its own. Kind of like Band-Aids. We put a Band-Aid on, it doesn't seal our skin tight. It just allows air movement through it. It's got those holes in it. It's the same with anything we put on a tree. You want to make sure that it can breathe still. I want to thank Mark Peters from PetersCrotonNursery.com for coming on. He has a most wonderful collection of crotons and cordylines. Check him out at Port St. Lucie Botanical Garden sale today and tomorrow. And then go to his website to find out where he's going to be at future plant sales. Let him know you heard him on the radio. He'll love that. And then also a big thank you to Dr. Jeff Williamson, Blueberry, and he's with IFAS and Extension, and he's such a great, great asset for Master Gardeners and 4-H. We really thank him for his work and his research efforts, and I'm going to be netting my blueberry trees.
Yes, definitely.
And then also, too, Dr. Gary Bachman and Katie are coming down. Come on down from Mississippi, Gary. We will have you here next week on the show. We're looking forward to it. Lots of plans. Lizzie, thank you so much. You are so wonderful.
Well, thank you. And thank you to our listeners. We have the best listeners in the whole wide world. So everybody else should be jealous, just saying.
I certainly do agree with you. And so we're here every Saturday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. And you can hear us. And if you miss any part of the show, you can hear it on podcast. And go to our Facebook page and like us. We would love doing that. We also appreciate all of our sponsors. When you go to our sponsors like Quality Green Specialists in DeLand, and then you go to Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, and then also Black Cow is a wonderful sponsor. Those are all great products that are good for the environment. They solve problems, and they make our gardens grow really well. You could also, this is a good, Peterson's Nursery in Lakeland. Howie, I hope you're feeling better. We didn't hear from you today, so we will be talking to you soon. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, maker of organic mosquito bits and dunks and organic year-round oil spray oil, I'm Teresa Watkins. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Go check out our website. We're giving away tickets to the Orlando Monster Jam at Camping World Stadium. Go to WFLAOrlando.com to enter win tickets there.